I think there's no doubt that the young 21-year-old man who apparently perpetrated this crime alone, killing 9 people at a church Bible study, the African-American church in Charleston, South Carolina, said his purpose was to begin a race war in America. And, you know, what can be said to address a mind like that? It seems to me that some people are so misdirected and so self-deceived that they can believe that this is a cause to kill other people for. And very, very tragic event that occurred there. And I think it points out that some people can be so fixed on an agenda or an issue that it blinds them to reality. And this can happen sometimes. They just get so transfixed on something and they lose reality. And unfortunately, it doesn't just happen, you know, in the world. It happens sometimes in church, you know, when people get that way. I still remember in the mid-70s watching a newscast where an elder went to the courthouse and shot his wife and an attorney and himself on the courthouse steps. Very, very, very sad string of events that occurred. Sometimes it can happen even with people with doctrinal ideas. They become so focused, you know, on their particular agenda that they can lose touch with reality. So I would just encourage you, as I've been thinking about this and meditating on it the last couple of days, please pray for the victims' families involved in this. And please pray for the family of the young man. I mean, sometimes we don't think about the disgrace and the questions that come up. You know, how did he get focused on this kind of hate? It's just really a tragic report, you know, on someone who obviously had a mental problem. But he was so transfixed, it developed a mental problem. And I think we need to remember the victims and the family of the perpetrator in this case. This morning I received, maybe some of you did too, if you subscribe to Life, Hope, and Truth, the blog is called The Charleston Tragedy, A Time to Sigh and Cry by Mr. John Fox, who's a member of our church in Salt Lake City. And I know John, he's from South Carolina, so he really is a very heartfelt blog and has some very good information. If you get a chance, you can go read that blog. But it is a time for us as Christians to sigh and cry for the abominations, which this certainly was, that occur within our world. Well, I ran off and forgot my notebook, but I have my computer. And I'm going to try to synchronize my computer with the slides that are on the memory stick that Brent has loaded. Okay, thank you. As I mentioned about 3 weeks ago when we went through Jerusalem and its history, we went through the Old Testament history of Jerusalem and the New Testament history of Jerusalem. And it kind of brings us up to where I want to begin today, and that's to begin to get into prophecies about the city of Jerusalem within our lifetime, we assume. And we certainly pray for. Some things will not be so good for this world that will occur. And as I read these prophecies, I'm going to focus on those that affect Jerusalem primarily. Remember, our Bible study is about the city of Jerusalem, past, present, and future. And as we go through this, I think we will move through some pretty difficult times, and we probably won't get to it today, but the next sermon Bible study combination that we have, we'll get into the millennium, what Jerusalem will be like in the millennium, and then we'll end up with the new Jerusalem, what it will be like, which I think you'll find is going to be an interesting study. So let's begin again by looking at our roots, because certainly our church began in Jerusalem in 31 AD. And the questions we want to ask again is, why do we need to know about Jerusalem? One is our history, and we need to learn the lessons of history, and then, of course, prophecy. Jerusalem is going to be very central to end time events, central to worship in the kingdom of God, and, of course, the new Jerusalem, which will be spiritual, still has a great deal said about it in the Bible. I'd like to turn to a couple of scriptures. Let's go to 1 John chapter 4, verse 21, or John 4, 21. In John chapter 4, verse 21, there's a discussion here that Christ has with the woman at the well. And I think you know the story where Christ said that she had more than one husband, and she wanted to know how he knew that. And she finally said in verse 19, "Sir, I perceive you're a prophet." And then she says in verse 20, "Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship." So she engages Christ in this discussion on where should someone worship. Oftentimes, people associate a place with worship of God. I've been asked many times, what do you do for a living? Sometimes by my barber or somebody in the neighborhood, my neighbor. And I tell them I'm a pastor. The first question they ask next is, where is your church? They don't quite understand when I say all over Northern California. Where all of you live, you know, we're scattered brethren. We live all over Northern California. They don't quite understand that because most people associate church with a place or a building. In fact, my neighbor said, "Oh, well, you really ought to go to my church, you know, Bayside. It's the biggest mega church, you know, in Sacramento. You ought to go there." My neighbor told me, and I said, "Well, no." I said, "We meet in," and then I said, "Hutchins Square," or "We meet in Citrus Heights Community Center," but the church is scattered all over. Christ was facing a similar question with this woman. She said, "Look, Mount Gerizim is the place from which we worship God. And we've been doing this a lot longer than that temple has existed in Jerusalem." At that point, it had been several hundred years. And I may have mentioned this before, but if you go to Mount Gerizim in northern Israel today, you will find there is still a group of people who kill and slaughter lambs for the Passover living in Israel today. And you can still go there and see this spectacle if you want. They still worship there. Now we're 2,000 years after Christ says what he says here. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father." The Jews feel the place is Jerusalem. They get that approval from David and Solomon. Remember when Solomon built the temple? Remember we went through that history? And God acknowledged that as the place of worship? And the Jews believe that when the temple was destroyed and the holy place was destroyed and ransacked and its treasures carried off to Rome in 70 AD, that the Spirit of God left the Holy of Holies and went into the foundation of the Temple Mount. And that's why they believe the closest place today, physically, to the Temple Mount, to the Holy of Holies, is the Western Wall. Because that would have been where the back of the temple was, and that would be the closest place to the foundation that was originally established by Solomon, and they believe God's Spirit dwells in that wall. That's why the Western Wall is so holy to the Jews today. And many Jews make the pilgrimage, do they not, to go to Jerusalem and to pray at the Western Wall. And if you've been there, you'll notice that there's lots of prayers people write on papers, and they stick them in the cracks between the stones and the western wall. That's because they believe God's Spirit is just inside of that western wall. It's kind of interesting. So they still believe what this woman says the Jews did believe. But Christ was beginning to contradict that. He says, the hour is coming, and he was talking about his death and the eventual destruction of the temple and the fact that the Holy Spirit would come and God's Spirit in people would designate the church, not a specific place. In verse 22, he says, you worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. And at that time it was, while Christ was still living. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and truth. And those are the designations of worship. It is not associated with a place any longer. I know when I've told people, and Linda and I have given several seminars on our trips over there, that we had visited Jerusalem, they go, oh, you visited the holy city. Well, I can tell you that the city of Jerusalem is not holy now. It's like any other ancient city. It reminds me a lot of Rome, Greece, in Athens in Greece, Corinth in Greece. Reminds me of Pella. Reminds me of Jeresh in Jordan, some of these other ancient cities. It is interesting to go there. I enjoy visiting there, but not holy. In fact, the city of Jerusalem today is divided more than any other city that I know of in the entire world. Berlin may have been a close second until the wall came down. But if you go visit Jerusalem today, you will find something I didn't find on my first visit in 1980. You will find a 30-foot concrete wall with barbed wire on top, going through the city of Jerusalem. It separates East Jerusalem from Jerusalem proper. And it's one of the big shocks that tourists have when they visit there and they come up from Jericho, up from the Jordan Valley, and go through the tunnel where Scopus Mountain is, and you come out and you first view the old city of Jerusalem, and you'll see the big concrete wall. It's ugly. Terrible. And the Jews have intentionally done that to separate themselves from Palestinians on the eastern side of that wall. And they have separated, literally separated the city. There are no cities in America that I know of that have a big wall down the middle that separate communities. But it's in Jerusalem today. It is not a holy city today. We do not feel it's a holy city. We feel a connection to it because of our history. And, of course, we look forward to the future when we see some of these prophecies unfold. And Christ said, you better look at this area and see these prophecies happening. And then, of course, we look forward to the future when Christ will return and establish Jerusalem as the headquarters of the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. But I'm getting way ahead of the story. Let's next go to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 8. 1 Peter 1:8. Peter is talking about Jesus Christ and God the Father, but specifically about Christ in verse 7. And then verse 8, 1 Peter 1:8, whom having not seen, you love. Though now you do not see him, yet believing, you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, that is, the salvation of your souls. We worship a God we cannot see. And we worship a God we do not associate with a particular physical place. Please understand, that is very unusual for monotheistic religious organizations or believers. The Muslims have three holy places that they encouraged their followers to pilgrimage to. Mecca being the first and primary, then Medina, the second, and the third is Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem. And they encouraged their followers to go there. You're more holy, it is a holy place in their eyes, to go to one of these three locations. So they associate holiness to one of these three. The Jews, as I explained, associate the Western Wall to the place where God is. This is their association. This is where they focus their worship and their belief. Christians, depending on what kind of Christians they are, focus on Rome, many of them, and the papacy. And many Christians perform pilgrimages, especially Easter time and Christmas time, to the Vatican. And they want to be there, and they want to receive the blessing from the Pope. If you don't believe that, just watch television on Christmas Day. Usually, some of the major networks are showing you the Pope comes out on the balcony, you know, and he blesses the crowd. And people are there swooning because they associate that with their belief system. But very plainly here, Peter says, look, we do not see him, yet believing we rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the end of our faith, the salvation of our souls. Let's go to 1 John chapter 4, verse 20. 1 John 4:20. It's forward in our Bibles a little, about 10 pages. 1 John 4:20. If someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he's a liar. It's kind of interesting, this young 21-year-old that shot these people in the church in Charleston, South Carolina. He said he almost didn't do what he had planned to do and what he eventually did. And the police said, well, why? And he says, because they treated me so nice. Which I thought, how ironic is that? But even though he said he hated these people and he wanted to kill them, they treated him nicely, which kind of surprised him. Anyway, verse 20. If someone says, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? So both Peter and John, and I believe Christ in his comments to the woman at the well, tell us very clearly that we believe and worship God in spirit and in truth, and we do not associate belief in God and worship of God to a particular place. I want to make that very clear. So what we understand today about Jerusalem is that it is an interesting, ancient city with a lot of rich history, nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to worship there. You know what I mean? I want us to understand that, because I think a lot of people associate Jerusalem with some special, almost mystical association, and it does not exist. What I'd like to do is go through just a little bit of history following the biblical period. I think it illustrates what we have just read from Christ and others. I want to jump ahead here. What is today known as the Old City was laid out by the Roman Emperor Hadrian. Hadrian, in the second century, began to rebuild Jerusalem as a pagan city. He wanted to squelch anything Jewish about it. So his objective was to make it as pagan as possible in Jerusalem. He visited the ruins of Jerusalem remaining after the first Jewish-Roman wars, which of course was at the time of the destruction of Herod's temple. He rebuilt the city and he renamed it Aliyah Capitolina in 135 current era. He installed a statue of Jupiter in the temple that he built there, and the king of all gods of the Romans. Can you imagine how God must have felt? How those early Christians who lived now in Asia Minor and were being persecuted by the Roman Church must have felt? The place they once held near and dear was now the place of Jupiter. The number one Roman god was placed on a pedestal where today we would probably associate with the Dome of the Rock. But let me show you. This is a slide of it's called, if I can find the name here, Baalbek, which is found in the ancient ruins. A similar temple built by the same builder at about the same time has been discovered at Baalbek in Lebanon. And it shows you basically the layout of the temple. You'll see the temple to Jupiter in the background. You have the porch, then it goes down to the atrium below. And the temple itself is more like a pentagon. An octagon style. So Hadrian came along and built this pagan temple right on the spot of the temple platform when he came about 75 years after the original destruction of the temple. There's a schematic showing where it would be today. This is a mosaic showing the head of the church crowning Constantine as the new converted king and the ruler of Christianity. And Constantine proclaimed many sites, and of course his mother, Helena, proclaimed many more religious sites in ancient Jerusalem as different locations. Many of those sites still exist today. Cathedrals, churches, and other memorials have been built on top of it. Here's a statue of Helena. When you go to Jerusalem today, most tourists will try to... got to catch up here in my notes. Most tourists will try to take you to sites like the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the church in Bethlehem where Christ was born. These were all determined by Helena about 300 years after the fact. And she went through the land and said, well, I think it's here. She also claimed to have found pieces of the original cross, pieces of the crown that was jammed down on Christ's head, pieces of his robe. Most of these relics today, which are just old relics, are considered holy to the Eastern Orthodox Church. And they're found on the island of Crete and Cyprus today. But Helena is responsible for identifying all these sites. We went on a tour in 2010. We went to Jordan for the feast, and then afterwards, Linda and I led the tour to Israel. And we had tour guides that were Christian Palestinians. In other words, they were Eastern Orthodox believers. And they wanted to take us to all these holy churches. And let me tell you, when you've seen one, you've seen them all. You know, they all look the same. They all got the same statuette inside. They all are laid out the same. In fact, the ancient ones are laid out like a cross. The schematic of the floor plan is like a cross. And like I said, after they took us to the first one, we said, look, we really don't need to see these. We'd prefer to see these other things. And they go, well, you're a Christian group, right? Why wouldn't you want to see these churches? And I said, well, frankly, we don't believe these are where these events actually took place. We believe that Christ was crucified up on Golgotha. He wasn't crucified down here. He was taken outside the city. We don't believe he was born in a church in Bethlehem. It says he was born in a cave, most likely, where they kept animals. Oh, didn't have much of an answer. But anyway, we finally convinced him to take us to other places besides churches. But if you go today, that's exactly what you'll see there. Whoops, pushed the wrong button. This is an artifact that claims... Well, I've got the wrong illustration there. What is that? This is an ancient map of ancient Jerusalem, the old city, and you'll see this Church of the Holy Sepulchre is emphasized there. This was a mosaic that came from the 4th century, and this is where they built a church, is where Helena said the church ought to be. And if you go to Jerusalem today, you'll see the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and it's been built and rebuilt several times, but it was on the same spot. Today, what you find on the Temple Mount is the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. And Jerusalem is basically controlled by the Israelis. Although the old city of Jerusalem is divided into four quarters, and one of those is an Arab quarter, where you can go and buy some very interesting things. It's mainly a merchant's shop. However, this platform, which is called the platform of the Temple Mount, is controlled by the Palestinians. It's rather awkward because the Israelis control all the land around the bottom of it, and they allow tourists to go up on top. But if there's a current conflict between Israelis and Palestinians, the Palestinians won't let you go up. Or if they let you go up, it's restricted. When I visited Jerusalem in the 80s, you could actually go in the Dome of the Rock. You could go down to the bottom of the Dome of the Rock. The guide even showed us the footprints of the horse that Muhammad was on when he leapt to heaven. You can see those in the rock. You could go into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and you could watch them worship there. But the last couple of times that we have been over there, 2010 and then again last year, you cannot go into the mosque or the Dome of the Rock because the Palestinians refuse any non-Muslims to enter either one of those buildings. So if you go today, you just would be allowed up on the platform to walk around where you see the trees and the bushes and around on the courtyard. But there's some pretty interesting things to see there. And if you go visit, I'd recommend you go and try to get up there. When we went there year before last with the volunteers from Jordan, there was a rock throwing incident. Sometimes Palestinian boys will go up on top and they'll pick up rocks and they'll throw them down on Jews that are praying by the Western Wall. And then the Israelis get mad and they close it off so no tourists can go up. And then the Palestinians get mad because they're losing the revenue from selling souvenirs on top. And they won't allow people to come up. So it's just one of these things that still continually goes on today. Unfortunately. Okay, let's notice what's going to happen to this section by looking at a few more prophecies, this section of Jerusalem. Let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24, verse 15. See what Christ says about the city of Jerusalem getting as we get closer to the time of the end. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Now, at the time of the writing of this, or the time of the statement that Christ made, the holy place was the holy place in the temple of Herod. Verse 16, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. Let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babes in those days, because obviously it's going to be a very serious time. People are going to have to escape the oncoming Holocaust. They will not have, as occurred with the time of the New Testament church, 4 years to get out of the city. The indication is something will happen right away. If anyone's there who is part of God's church, they need to get out in a hurry. Woe to those, verse 19, we read those who are read that who are pregnant and are nursing. And verse 20, and pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. As we mentioned, the elevation is close to 3,000 feet. In the wintertime, it can be very cold. It can even snow. And, of course, on the Sabbath, if the city is religiously dictated by the Jews, which we think it will be, and I'll get to that in just a minute, then you would think that any movement on the Sabbath would be noticed. It was last year when I went over. Linda didn't go. I went over to be with the volunteers from Jordan. We actually stayed in an apartment in the Jewish quarter. Well, it wasn't. It was in the Jewish section of Jerusalem. And in the Jewish section of Jerusalem, everything shuts down on the Sabbath. People walk. There's no traffic. Trains stop, buses stop. Everybody walks to the synagogue. If you go into a building that has an elevator, it's automatically put on Shabbat mode, which means that it stops on every floor, going up and going down, so you don't have to go through the effort of pushing the button. It actually has to do with electronics and starting a fire. They associate any ignition of electronics, like to push the button for the fifth floor, is like starting a fire, and you can't do that. So they put it on Shabbat mode, so it stops on every floor going up and every floor going down. In fact, some hotels have a Shabbat elevator. You know, when they have a bank of elevators, they have a Shabbat elevator just for the Jews who don't have to go through that effort. In fact, one time we were in Jerusalem and Linda got in the wrong elevator and a Jewish woman bawled her out. You're not supposed to be in that elevator, Shabbat elevator, pointed to the Goyim elevator, which is for us Gentiles. Anyway, I'm getting far afield from where I need to be. Verse 21, for then there shall be great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. What I'd like to do is to talk about the abomination of desolation for just a moment. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 11. Daniel 11 and verse 31. This was prophesied by Daniel. When Christ mentioned it in Matthew 24, he was referring to this prophecy. In verse 31, it talks about Daniel 11, by the way, is the longest prophecy in the Bible. It talks about the king of the north and the king of the south. And again, I don't want to get into any more than that which is associated with Jerusalem. Verse 31, and forces shall be mustered by him, that is the king of the north, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Christ referred to that as the holy place. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. What are the daily sacrifices? Well, within the temple, the priests were given the responsibility of performing the evening. Remember, the day began in the evening and the morning sacrifices. Every day, the priest administered the evening and the morning sacrifices. During the holy day season, all the priests came in and administered the sacrifices on the holy days and during the holy day period. But on every given day, they performed the evening and the morning sacrifices. In order to have those taken away, in order for the abomination of desolation to be set up in its place, what needs to take place? Well, they have to be started, right? You have to have evening and morning sacrifices. They have to be reinstituted. They're not going on today. What do you need to reinstitute them? Some people say you need a temple. Well, during the time of Nehemiah, what did Nehemiah do? He built part of the wall and then he put up an altar. And he started the evening and the morning sacrifices only with an altar. So we have a biblical precedent that you can do the evening and morning sacrifices without a temple. All you need is an altar in Jerusalem. What else might you need? Well, you need a priesthood. Then you need animals to sacrifice, right? Sometimes on the internet you'll read about somebody's found the red heifer, the unblemished red heifer, and they go, oh, no, we found one white hair. She doesn't qualify. Or he has a heifer. She doesn't, I'm sorry. Then you got to go to, okay, what else do you need? Well, if you've ever visited the city of Jerusalem, you know what you need is a religious revival. Basically, Israel is a secular country. In fact, they have a saying in Jerusalem. It says, you pray in Jerusalem, you play in Tel Aviv. And if you go to Tel Aviv, you will find topless beaches. You'll find gambling places. You'll find high-rise hotels. You'll find almost everything you would find in Las Vegas in Tel Aviv. Basically, people are not religious outside of those religious enclaves in Jerusalem. It's basically a secular country. So what needs to take place in Jerusalem for them to be inspired to reinstitute evening and morning sacrifices? A religious revival. So if I were being asked, what should you watch in Israel? I would say, watch for a religious revival. Now we get into speculation. What could cause a religious revival in Israel? Maybe if somebody dropped a nuclear weapon on part of Israel, that might sober them up. Another thing that I speculated about, what if they found an ancient religious symbolic relic? And you might ask, well, what kind of a relic? As I said, we're in the area of speculation now. What if they found the Ark of the Covenant? Do you think that might spark a religious revival in Israel? It could. Like I said, there's a number of things it could. What else could it be? There could be a number of things that occur. Now, you'll notice, if we go back, let me go back just... you notice these walls, you're looking at the western wall and the southern wall primarily here of that temple platform. If you go to Jerusalem, you can take what they call a tunnel tour at night, which is kind of interesting because you can go into the tunnels that enter underneath the temple wall, just north of the western wall, and you can actually take a guided tour and go through a labyrinth of tunnels that exist. Now, the Jews keep a tight lock on this. Remember, they control all around the temple platform. And they are exploring the labyrinth. It's like a honeycomb of tunnels underneath the city of Jerusalem, underneath this old city. Now, there are some lores among the Jews that say that when the temple was attacked by the Babylonians, that the priests hid the Ark of the Covenant in this labyrinth. There are other people who say it was taken by some priest down in North Africa. You know, there's several different traditions about what happened to the Ark of the Covenant. But it could be somewhere in this maze of tunnels underneath the temple platform. It could be that it would be discovered. That could lead to a religious revival, right? Something has to happen to cause the evening and the morning sacrifices to be reinstituted. We're not going to read it, but Daniel chapter 12 tells us it will be 1130 days that these sacrifices will go on, and then they will be cut off, right? And the abomination of desolation will be set up by the king of the north as he comes down from the north. And the church again is traditionally taught that this is whoever's basically ruling the Holy Roman Empire at the time of the end, or what is left of that Holy Roman Empire at the time of the end. Okay, let's go back to Daniel 8 and verse 9. Daniel 8 and verse 9. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land, which is what we're talking about. And it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host of those of the stars of the ground and trampled them. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away. Again, this is a reference to the king of the north. He's symbolized in this prophecy by the little horn. He is the one responsible for taking away the daily sacrifices that are going to be reinstituted in Israel. And the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Talking about the return of Christ, who overcomes him eventually and casts him down. Okay. I'm going to try to get down here in my PowerPoint notes. Let's take another look at the city today as it stands. These are the four quarters of the old city today. You have the Temple Mount, the Western Wall, the Armistice Line, the Muslim Quarter, the Christian Quarter, the Armenian Quarter, and the Jewish Quarter. So these are the four quarters of the city today. And as I said, the Israelis can control all the land around the Temple Mount, but the Palestinians actually control the platform on top today. Here's another example of the Christian Quarter, where the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, one of the most holy places in the Christian world today, is. And it gives you an idea about how many blocks that one quarter of the town, the old city, what they call the old city of Jerusalem, which is inside the walls that were constructed by the Turks and the Ottomans. That's what comprises the old city today, is the Turkish walls. Okay, let's go to our next slide. Jerusalem today. I'd like to maybe speculate with you a little bit. You'll see the Western Wall, otherwise known as the Wailing Wall, the Temple Mount, the Dome of the Rock, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Al-Aqsa Mosque holds about 5,000 worshipers. The Dome of the Rock is not a place of worship. It is a holy place for Muslims. In other words, they go there. They do not usually pray there. They go there as kind of a pilgrimage because they believe Muhammad leapt from heaven from this location. But there is no secular proof anywhere in history that Muhammad was ever in Jerusalem. So it's all tradition. This is what the Dome of the Rock looks like today. It's a beautiful building covered with tiles and mosaics, which are indicative of the time when it was built, which was somewhere around 600 AD. This is a breakaway of the dome. You'll see what it looks like. The location of the Dome of the Rock was established as the site of the Islamic miracle of Muhammad leaping into heaven. And this is a picture of the limestone flat piece. Can you hold your questions until we get into the Bible study? Hang on to that, Lisa. Okay. And this is in the lower part, as you see, in the middle section right under the Dome of the Rock. And when we get into the Bible study, I'd be happy to address a number of questions regarding the prophecy and these places. So hold that. The Al-Aqsa Mosque is one of the larger mosques in the world. As I said, it holds 5,000 worshipers. And I don't know how many of you were around in 1967. A few of you. There was an Australian by the name of Rowan who locked himself in the mosque because it was open then to the public. And he had weapons and he had explosives. And he thought that the mosque needed to be destroyed and he was going to blow it up. And there was negotiations that took place, and eventually he was overcome and he was arrested. And to my knowledge, he's still in prison in Israel, if he's still alive. I'm not sure he's still alive. The bad part was they found with him a stack of Plain Truth magazines in the mosque. That's the bad part. He had read the Plain Truth magazine and decided that these holy places needed to be destroyed. But the point I'm trying to make is we can have sacrifices without either one of these places being destroyed. Okay. This is the Western Wall. This is an old picture. It's now divided. You have the women's side and the men's side for prayer. Okay, I'd like to share with you a little bit of information about where the temple was. This is an aerial view of the platform. And this is the warning by the Israelis. According to the Torah, it is forbidden for any person to enter the area of the Temple Mount due to its sacredness. So no Israeli will actually go up on the platform because of this warning. So you just have Palestinians and tourists who go up because they're afraid you may step on the place of the Holy of Holies. Indicating that not all Jews believe that the Dome of the Rock was built over the place of the Holy of Holies. By its very shape, it is given that it was built over the place of Hadrian's temple to the Roman god. So we need to understand that. So there are several theories about where the temple originally was, and therefore where the Holy of Holies was. The original temple faced towards the Mount of Olives, as you may recall. And the Holy of Holies was in the back of the temple towards the Western Wall, as I've discussed. One of the theories is that the temple was actually placed further up north of where the Dome of the Mosque is today. And that the Holy of Holies is located, or was located, at a place today that's called the Dome of the Tablets, which is kind of an interesting name. It's an open dome. I'm going to show you a picture here in a minute. And when I went there in 1988 with Dr. Richard Page from Ambassador College, it was his feeling that if the dome was anywhere, I mean, if the Holy of Holies would have been located anywhere, it would be more likely at the Dome of the Tablets. And this would account for a northern location of the original Temple of Herod. For example, this is the Dome of the Rock, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is where most people believe the temple originally was. But I don't happen to believe that, not necessarily. So there are basically two theories. One theory is that the temple was located about where these two buildings are today. So if somebody was going to build an altar at a location where the Holy of Holies used to be, they could build it without destroying either of the current buildings that are there that belong to the Muslims. Another theory is that the temple was built north of the Dome of the Rock, which would put the Holy of Holies, where it originally was, where the place of the Dome of the Tablets is now. It's a small open dome. And so you could actually establish an altar there to start the evening and the morning sacrifices. So with these different theories, you can see how some of the Jews, if there was a religious revival that took place, and there has to be one for them to start sacrificing again, it could actually take place without either one of these buildings being destroyed. In fact, there is some discussion now, as the Pope gets more involved, that the temple platform should be dedicated to all three monotheistic religions for prayer. And if that happened, the Jews, of course, would insist on restoring sacrifices. So if it were determined that the temple was either placed north or south of the existing Dome of the Rock, they could start sacrificing in either of those locations without disturbing either one of the Muslim holy places. So see where I'm going with this? It could actually take place pretty quickly and without destroying either one of those buildings. In fact, let me go back at it. I don't think everybody saw that star. I'm going to bring that star up again. See where that star is? I don't know if you can see that in a picture, but that's roughly where that Dome of the Tablets is today, which could mark the location of where the Holy of Holies was at one time. So here's the location, the southern location, which is would be between the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock today. There's a picture of the Dome of the Tablets. It's a little open dome. It is north of the current Dome of the Rock, and it would coincide with the northern location, which is one of the theories about where the temple used to be. Right there, the Dome of the Tablets. This is a picture of the Eastern Gate, which faces the Mount of Olives. You'll notice that it's bricked up. You know who bricked that up? The Muslims. You know why they bricked it up? All the other gates around the city are open and traffic flows through them. They too have heard of the prophecies that Christ is going to return to the Mount of Olives and he's going to enter the city of Jerusalem through the Eastern Gate. So they bricked it up to prevent Christ from entering the holy city. That's true. You look at it today, it's all bricked up. And that's the reason why. But you'll notice in the background I've got the little red arrow on the dome of the tablets. The Dome of the Tablets lines up in a straight line through the Eastern Gate to the peak of the Mount of Olives across the valley. Interestingly enough, there's the Dome of the Tablets in this photograph on top of the Temple Mount. And if you draw a straight line from the Dome of the Tablets through the Eastern Gate, it comes over to the Mount of Olives, which would make sense with the location of the original temple of Herod, that he would have put the Holy of Holies where the Jews wanted it placed in the consulting advice that he got, so that it would line up with the Eastern Gate and the Mount of Olives. All we need for daily sacrifices is an altar, right? You don't need to tear down any buildings. You don't need to destroy anything, because I think there's enough support among the religious Jewish community to place the location of the sacrifices on the original area of the Holy of Holies, which would take place either north or south of the existing Dome of the Rock. What will happen? Well, that brings us to the end of our regular service. And then we'll take about a 10-minute break and we'll come back and we'll talk about more prophecies regarding the city of Jerusalem.